1058. The PIN number is 641711. The WBAI Community Advisory Board provides input to our local station board from community members about programming and station operations. And everyone is welcome to call in and join the CAB meeting. Again, the meeting is this Sunday, August 20th at 1 p.m. The call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number is 641711. We hope you can attend.
Playing any Jew card.
Seriously, it's used up.
You can't use up a Jew card. That's the whole point of a Jew card.
That's right. You can't use it up. It goes forever.
You practicing?
No, I'm not a practicing Jew. I perfected it.
Of course, there were upper class Jews, but I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the c**ks in Soho. Foreigners.
You are now listening to
Beyond the Pale,
radio's home for the Jewish left,
with your host,
Raphael Shimanoff.
A is for the apple, take a bite and spit it out. B is for bodega, eating on your mama's couch. No bazooka, with a Puerto Rican chula. Says she working in the city and she getting moolah. C is for the crib, the cats to call you catch. CBGB's baby sneaking blondie through the back. D is for the downtown kids that's hitting licks. Skater boys in the park trying to fuck some white chicks. E is for the east side, rough ride, ride or die. Motorbikes from every style, flying down the FDR, breaking Dutchess in the car. G is for the ghetto girls and rainbow clothes. Baby hairs and well done toes, single mothers carry those. Bummy sneakers, what are those? Getting going, golden gold. Hunts Point got the hottest hoes. In the city, tragic woes. Saddest street, the bloody hoes. Shorty dancing on the pole. Casually, it's casual beat. Bloody hands with the anatomy. Jehovah Witness at your door, acting like nobody home. TV off, all alone. Kick the door, Mama Jones in on the phone. Baka in the doobie on, waiting on her tax return. No lies, lighting L's, pouring down for ones they love. Tompkins Square, Lower East, the Nancy for the deli meats. Jewish, Puerto Rican, and a little bit Italian. Sitting on the steps outside, the natural history. New York, off the city, and I love the history. Everything a melting pot, every block of ups getting high. 83rd, the train stop. Open cases, old and shorty braces. Pick you up on Warren Squad, now they running faces. Pick you up by the park, we was voguing by the pier. Paris burning full of queens, hit the village every year. Rolling now to the rave, village boys, six page. I was diving off the stage, going now every day. Stick ball in the summer, you know it's summertime. Sean Marie and Soul Food singing throughout every night. Subway trains going by, squatter sitting St. Mark's. Shooting up in Tompkins Park, know it's dirty after dark. Tunnels taking turns, playing tag on the curb. Touching on some that's me taking change out your purse. Undercover agents, I can spot a mile away. Yo, I hate the nigga cops, NYPD get away. Underground on MTA, close my eyes and ride the train. Back and forth and every day, anywhere, anyway. Xerox copy zine, staple on to pose the trees. Got a show, come and see, New York is the place to be. Where you go and live your dreams. Living in the city, you can't be a xenophobe. This the melting pot and the soup is never cold. Young lords, they live inside of me. I got a problem B with white supremacy. Rolling through my zip code, 10029. ABC's in New York and I'll be doing fine.
That was Princess Nokia with the ABCs of New York, Puerto Rican, Jewish, and a little bit Italian. It is 9:03 a.m. You are listening to Beyond the Pale Radio, the home, radio's home for the Jewish left here on WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming on WBAI.org. The Pale, for those who don't know, was the only area in Tsarist Russia where Jews were allowed to live. Beyond the Pale thus came to signify transgression, danger, and unconventional behavior. The program Beyond the Pale, we will explore in unconventional ways the experience, identity, culture, and politics of contemporary Jews from the diaspora. Our engineer is the excellent Wuyi Jacobs, who you can catch on his show, Afrobeat Radio, Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. right here on BAI. And I am your host, Raphael Shimanov. Shoshana Brown, my co-host, cannot make it here today. They have a very special day today, which they'll update you when they return next week. Today, you can call in at 212-209-2877. We will be talking about climate change. We're looking at these Maui wildfires, and, you know, that's on top of the news. I really hate actually calling them wildfires because it kind of indicates that it's just like this natural thing happening, that there's no one's responsibility. But what's happening in Maui and across the world is the doing of certain billionaires, certain corporate greedy people, certain elected officials and regulators they have purchased or influenced. It's not of nature's making, nor is this assault right now on Native Hawaiians by people using the fallout as they've done in Puerto Rico and elsewhere, to continue these human rights crimes and profit from it, to buy property and to continue colonizing these islands. Today, I have a very special guest from an organization called Dayenu, which our guest will explain the origin and the work that's done. Our guest is Dalia Rakowitz, the Director of Campaigns and Partnerships at Dayenu. Dalia has worked organizing across climate work and Jewish social justice movements. She's planned trainings for thousands of volunteers around the world with the Climate Reality Project and worked to campaign the U.S. government towards human rights and climate justice globally. Dalia joins us as the Director of Campaigns and Partnerships at Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate change. Good morning, Dalia.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
You know, we always ask, we don't always, sometimes it feels like this is kind of on the borderline. Like sometimes it feels like it's like this happy morning and everyone's cheerful and we can ask the silly question about what your favorite schmear is, what your spread on a bagel is and bagel. And then sometimes we don't do it when it's like serious, and this is such a serious time, but it seems like every day is now a serious time and more, but I don't know. Everyone tells me we fight all this with joy. So I really want to learn what your what your schmear is.
I appreciate that. And I try and take my work very seriously, but not myself very seriously. So I am happy to share that I have a very New York bagel order, which is a black Russian bagel. And for those who are uninitiated, it's a pumpernickel bagel with sesame seeds. And I love it with a olive cream cheese schmear. The olives have got to be just green olives with those pimentos. I think that is the perfect combination. Please, if you're in the New York area, it's really hard to find those black Russian bagels outside New York. Order a black Russian with olive cream cheese today on my behalf.
I will definitely give this a try. I don't think I've had the bagel. I don't think I've had that combination, but I haven't had that bagel since I would think one of my relatives just had those all the time. I don't remember who.
Got to bring it back.
One of the elders. Yeah, yeah. Amazing. And thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, I really know that for myself and so many of us, it's been a really heavy few weeks, especially watching the tragedy unfold in Maui and just hearing the personal stories of people escaping the fires in Lahaina. So really glad that we're taking time to reflect on this moment and really how we can chart a new way forward and use the time that we have, this precious window of opportunity, to hopefully ensure that these types of fires, which, as you said, are not natural by any means, they very much are on human intervention. But on the flip side, human intervention can make these less likely and hopefully chart a course towards a better future.
Yeah, I was looking at the how to support. I was just researching how to support, and I've seen like a few things. One looked promising, Maui Mutual Aid Fund. And then there's a site that lists a bunch of them called Maui and New, what is it? My Maui and NUI strong.info. Maui NUI strong.info, which had a list of a lot of things. And then I looked at the people locator. They have a spreadsheet going around, and apparently there's still up to maybe 1,300 people missing in that sheet. And they've only reached less than half of Lahaina in the search as of this point. And I can't imagine, like, when a crisis like this happens in the States or in Europe or in Africa, there's all these neighboring countries that are just like adjacent, and Hawaii being one of the most remote islands from other places with people and resources. I can't imagine how much more challenging it is. And so we were thinking, Shoshana and I were thinking a lot about what's going on there. And also, like, a lot of people are talking about this crisis, this disaster, this crime, human rights crime, in many different ways. What I often am for this show, for our lane, I'm always interested in, like, okay, that's good. What are my people doing? what are the Jews doing? What's the Jewish call? What's the Jewish call? Like, just like all of our stuff, what's the Jewish call to human rights? What's the Jewish call to worker rights? What's the, you know, like, not that it's something to necessarily center, but something to really hold our community accountable for using their, in many places, power and privilege and resources and history and ancestors and culture and all the beautiful things. And that's, of course, not a blanket statement. Not all Jews have all of those things. But so I'm very interested. Like, when I first heard about Dayenu as a project, it was being built. It was being... they were recruiting for people, and I loved the term. Could you explain to our listeners, are very mixed from many different backgrounds. Could you explain the term Dayenu, and then could you tell us more about the organization?
Sure. Happy to. So for many, when I share that I work at an organization called Dayenu, people will frequently sing back to me the song that is our namesake, Dayenu, which, for those who have not attended a Passover Seder, is a song that we, as Jews and allies, will chant during the Passover Seder, during our celebration of that holiday. And the direct translation and the spirit of that song is, it would have been enough. And the song sort of enumerates all the different things that God has done for the Jewish people over the era. And then the chorus is essentially, it would have been enough. But then we come back and say, but then there's all these other things. And in some ways, it's celebrating all that has happened. And it's also acknowledging all that much more that we desire and that we need as a community. So I will say that this decision predates my time at Dayenu, but some very wise people and advisors really were reflecting on this idea of enough. And so the name Dayenu captures the spirit, the essence of that song. And we sort of see it as a twofold vision. On one side, it's enough, in that we have enough. We've had enough of climate disasters, of environmental injustice, of runaway climate change. But on the flip side of that, we have enough. We have the political will. We have the technology. We have the spiritual technology. And so hope is not lost. There's still so much we can do. We must embrace this window and act. And so in some ways, it's a cry of anger. And in some ways, it's a call to action.
And also in my childhood, it was always like, you know, being very, very young and then seeing people shouting that at the Seder table was one of the most exciting parts of what, to me, before I was bar mitzvahed and understood much of it, it was one of the most exciting parts, because I was like, what are these adults repeating? What does this mean? It was a very fun moment that I recall in my thing. So, like, whenever I think of it, I have these very warm memories. And it is a beautiful name for such an organization, because it has that, I don't know, it's like a uniting call, and it's just perfect for what the mission is. So now, like, could you describe for me Dayenu's, like, mission and work and how you go about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a 3-year-old organization. And the genesis story, if you will, of Dayenu has to do with a series of polls and surveys, the earliest of which from 2014, but pretty consistently up until, frankly, even just a few months ago, showing that for American Jews, and in relationship to other faith groups, American Jews have some of the highest levels of concern and alarm about the climate crisis. So there was some polling done with various faith groups in the United States. And what the surveyors found is that 8 in 10 American Jews are extremely concerned or alarmed, the highest levels of concern around the climate crisis. And yet, despite that result, our founder and CEO, Rabbi Jenny Rosen, was reflecting on the fact that climate was, and unfortunately to this day, is not a central issue in the Jewish community. And in some corners is not really seen as a Jewish issue, seen as more peripheral, not necessarily something that is core to our Jewish identity, or is core work of the Jewish community. And with an issue that's as large as climate, there isn't one solution. There isn't one strategy. And frankly, there isn't one group, sector, or stakeholder that is going to ultimately deliver the solutions. It's really going to be on all of us. And so we created Dayenu to bring American Jews off the sidelines, to reach the American Jews that know and care about climate crisis, and bring them into this work in a meaningful way. And so our model is really focused on building the Jewish climate movement. We know that we need the power and sway to demand change from all corners of society. And the only way to do that is if we organize and mobilize our own. And there had not previously been a dedicated effort in the Jewish community. There had been a lot of really great work and frankly, a lot of intersectional work happening that touched on climate change, but not a focused effort. And so now we are really focused on mobilizing Jewish individuals, communities, and institutions to take systemic climate action to get at those root causes. We have a particular focus on a distributed organizing model. So that means we have chapters, we call them Dayenu circles, all across the country, upwards of 100 that are in process of being formed or already founded. So if you're joining from the New York area, we have a lot of Dayenu circles in the New York metro area. And if you're joining from across the country, take a look at our website, dayenu.org.circles, to find a Dayenu circle near you. And our goal is to in a coordinated fashion, to point those grassroots Dayenu leaders and Dayenu circles in conjunction with Jewish institutions and others who are looking to take action towards policy interventions, towards, corporate campaigning and financial interventions, trying to change the political landscape, ultimately move in one direction in coordination with the broader climate movement to hopefully turn the tide. And there's so much urgency around this moment. We see it in the extreme weather that makes clear that the climate crisis is not some far off threat, but we are actually living the reality of it on a day-to-day level. The science and politicians, frankly, are pretty clear that we're in this less than 10-year window to be able to make the most impact to avert even worse climate impacts. Yeah, and so we at Dayenu are really motivated by that urgency, and we are looking to bring anyone and everyone, Jews, friends, and allies, into this work, because now really is the moment to have the most impact, to stop the most harmful impacts of the crisis.
It is 9:18. You are listening to Beyond the Pale, radio's home for the Jewish left, here on WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming on WBAI. Today, we have a wonderful guest, Dalia Rakowitz of Dayenu, the Jewish call to climate, to confront climate change. Or it's actually the Jewish call, a Jewish call to climate change. And this is really critical time for this kind of radio. Like, I'm so grateful that BAI is able to have this truly independent show, so independent from the very corporations and powers that perpetuate and inflame and profit from climate crisis. So I'm just reminding folks that this doesn't happen for free. It happens for very high costs to broadcast this show. And rents and salaries, and you'll be surprised how small the team is that makes it all happen. And if you want to contribute to keep this show going, to keep BAI going, to give us independent coverage like this, independent from the people causing climate change, you could go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. You could become a buddy of the show. You could give a donation in support of the show so they know that you heard from us. Or you could donate at 212-209-2663. 2950. And we're returning to Dahlia Rockowitz of Dianu, and we're talking about climate change, what's happening in Maui, the Jewish perspective. One thing that struck me when you were saying the Jewish links to fighting climate change was, you know, my early memories of my this is such a tropey kind of thing, but early memories of my grandma and my grandpa, like, complaining about the temperature in various places wherever they possess, and they're a little call to action for that. But is there, like, you're talking about specifically reminds me of, for example, organizations like Never Again Action, who mine and activate Jewish history and culture and authority on the issue of immigration and tie themselves to trucks of ICE to prevent deportations and things like that. And of course, other groups like Jews Against the Death Penalty, who was recently on the show, using our traditions and our cultures to kind of empower that fight. It sounds really interesting that it wasn't until Dayenu that there was a climate one that specifically and focused on that. What are some ways you think that it's activating to our community to join this fight? Like, what have you seen, like, or what have you heard people say when, and what did these trainings look like? You have all these circles, all these, you call them circles. They're like chapters, I imagine, but they're like, probably I'm imagining also like very people driven. And I'm wondering, like, what do those look like? Like, where is the intersection happening of our faith, our different cultures? Why does that make it powerful?
Yeah. All good questions that I will, try and touch on various bits and pieces. I think that, first of all, just want to acknowledge that there are a lot of Jews in the climate movement. There's actually also, there are Jews at the center of the story and the solutions in Hawaii. And just want to point out the governor of Hawaii, Josh Green, is Jewish. One of the senators from Hawaii, who's been a longtime climate champion, Brian Schatz, is also Jewish. And I think what we see in a lot of progressive movements and a lot of issues that really are around justice, there is strong representation from the Jewish community. And it's a real privilege to get to work in my own community, but also get to work in collaboration with other Jews who also populate a lot of other organizations and movements. And I think a lot of that has to do with, for Dayenu, climate is a justice issue. It's not something that's out there. It's something that's in our communities. It exacerbates historic inequalities. It really creates winners and losers. And there are bad actors. There are those who are directly responsible for the climate crisis. And I will say, our training curriculum, we have a climate organizing training that's called Taking Down Goliath. And really the focus here is calling out fossil fuel companies and the politicians and companies that do their bidding that are profiting off of climate destruction. So we really want to call out those actors. And we know that we have people power and we can build the power to counteract the influence and sway that they have. So in that sense, yes. We are building a movement in order to call out the bad actors and to call in those who either feel overwhelmed and paralyzed or benefit from the status quo. And it's scary to say that we need to be thinking entirely different about our society and our economy. Mm-hmm. And so I will also add, a key pillar of our work is what we call spiritual adaptation. Mm. So for the uninitiated, adaptation is, you know, one of those jargon words used in the climate movement, but it's about really more so how we respond to things that we cannot change. We know that we've come so far. There are harmful impacts we can prevent. And there are things that can't be undone, especially those in the New York area that have lived through Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Isaias, you know, have seen the tangible results of we have to find a new way forward. And so we try and bring in that spiritual resilience, that spiritual grounding to root ourselves in that work, to give us the courage to confront the climate crisis and sustain us in that. So I think both in terms of our training, our organizing training, and in this spiritual work that we do, that is something that is unique to Dayenu and sort of one of the reasons that we feel that there is value to be doing this organizing work in Jewish community, and in a way that's rooted in Jewish history and text and tradition. I will say, in terms of what we find animates American Jews across the country, I will say it really does vary, but something that is a thread that comes through not only in the Jewish tradition, but speaking with colleagues in other faiths as well, is, you know, the concept of L'dor V'dor, the Jewish imperative of continuing from one generation to the next, and the need to acknowledge that the climate crisis is and will continue to impact, whether you call it Jewish continuity or whether you just call it the continuation of the richness and beauty and diversity that is the Jewish people. And I think whether it's grandparents looking at what they owe future generations, or it's fantastic youth leaders and young adults that are looking at the world that they're inheriting, this is something that we find resonates across the Jewish community. Beyond that, I will say, you know, we are now living in a world where the vast majority of Americans have experienced a climate-fueled extreme weather disaster. And so people are really starting to experience this directly and are thinking about what they can be doing. And we want them to see us as an inbox, a place to go, both to find like-minded people and community, but also to get trained up and also identify ways to really be impactful. It's not on every individual and every community to figure out what is the most strategic intervention. That is something an organization like Dayenu can provide. And for our Dayenu circles, they really vary, just like the Jewish community varies across the country. Some are housed at congregations or institutions. Some are groups of friends or neighbors. I will say Dayenu has only existed in a COVID world. So I think to some extent, that has also impacted the trajectory of our organization. And now 3 years in, we're a three-year-old organization. I'm really excited and curious to see what the next phase looks like, especially with more happening in person, and more opportunities to meet new people and connect around shared values and shared action opportunities. So our Dayenu circles are asked to participate in Dayenu campaigns. We have campaigns that are focused on changing the political landscape, so nonpartisan voter engagement and turnout. We have campaigns that are focused on changing policies and passing regulations and standards that really, again, get at large-scale climate action. We have campaigns that are focused on the financial system, moving money out of fossil fuels and towards clean energy and climate solutions, and really also campaigns that are focused on movement building, cultural organizing, and ensuring the Jewish community is showing up when the broader movement is mobilizing on climate action.
You recently, I saw on Twitter, you recently were at the White House celebrating. There's a segment in the Inflation Reduction Act that addresses climate, and it's not what everyone, of course, has hoped for, but it's very large and historic in its way. And I was wondering if you could share with me, was that was that the anniversary of it?
Yes, this past Wednesday was the 1 year anniversary of President Biden signing into law the Inflation Reduction Act. And so he gave a big speech at the White House, of which I was happy to attend. Happy to go into more on the Inflation Reduction Act. So, but we'll say, as you rightfully pointed out, it's really the first ever piece of meaningful climate legislation ever passed at the federal level. It falls short, and we'll say that in a particular area where it falls short is doing right by environmental justice communities and communities that are on the front lines of the climate crisis. But it's really a starting point that we're hoping to build off of in the years ahead.
And what are the big wins on that one that we're selling? Yeah.
So the Inflation Reduction authorizes $370 billion in climate investments. And some of that is in tax credits, incentives for building out additional climate clean energy infrastructure. Excuse me. There's dedicated money for historically marginalized groups, those who have been excluded and have been unable to access that type of investment in their community in the past. Through accompanying legislation, there's money to build out technology for charging electric vehicles. There's a big tranche of money on building electrification, which has the added bonus of helping people stay in their homes by saving money on their heat and electricity costs, and hopefully creating affordable housing that is both energy efficient and affordable. So there's a lot in there, but really it is a check to the American people to pay for this transition that we know needs to happen off of fossil fuels towards clean energy.
Yeah. And I imagine the organization itself and the circles, are they activated to like call kind of legislators and regulators and things and promote policy that way?
Yeah, I will say that Dainu circles and leaders and staff spent over 18 months shoulder to shoulder with the broader climate and environmental justice movement, trying to get the strongest piece of legislation passed. So this is something that we as Dainu have invested a lot in. And now 1 year into this legislation, the money that was authorized is now actually flowing into communities. And so this fall and for the months following, we're about to launch a new campaign that's really focused to make sure that the money from the Inflation Reduction Act is delivering on its promise, that it's making it to the communities who need it the most, that we're reducing barriers to accessing that money, that we're making sure that it's flowing. And in particular, that we're showing proof of concept. We're showing all the benefits of climate action so that we can continue to pass even more ambitious action. I think to some extent, this is the real potential of the Inflation Reduction Act, that we're seeing that it's creating good paying union jobs. The estimate is that, you know, we could have 9 million jobs created because of the Inflation Reduction Act, that it's, again, helping with affordable housing, energy efficient housing, that it's improving access to transit and transportation, and that people then understand and see the value of this type of action. And we can see at the local, state and federal level, even more funding, even more regulation and an enabling environment so that we're really moving off of this fossil fuel, dirty energy economy and towards one that's thinking about justice, that's centering justice, and that's centering sustainability in everything that we do.
And this is a lot of impact on nationally and on the big level, like, you know, wide lens. Is there like specific things that Dainu does locally, like in New York City, or has participated in locally?
Yes. So I'll do a specific focus on New York, given our audience. Yeah. And I will also say New York is a real leader on climate action. And that is, I think, a testament to the incredible movements, community-based organizations, advocates in the state that have been working on this for decades. So, just a few years ago, New York State passed the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the CLCPA. At the time, it was really the strongest piece of state climate legislation, and it had remained unfunded for about 2 years. And really, from a sustained organizing effort on the part of a whole ecosystem of organizations with support of Dainu circles and leaders, in the past legislative cycle in Albany, money was started to be allocated towards implementing this legislation. And that was a good first step. And I'm starting in January, we're going to do it all over again. There's a lot more that was left on the table, but I think New York has the potential to continue to be a leader and to set a precedent for other states. An example of that in the past session, New York State passed a ban on fossil fuels in new construction, new buildings, which is, I think they were the second or third state to do that. And so now we have to stave off attacks. We have to make sure that there's money and investment to build that fossil free.
Yeah, you're going infrastructure. Up against developers, the most powerful.
Absolutely.
Force.
That was a huge, huge win. Yeah. Huge win. And I will say that, you know, there's such great works continuing to happen. I would say keep a lookout. I know that there is a ice cream truck traveling around or a banner with some free ice cream traveling around New York City area to bring attention to a piece of legislation that didn't pass last year, the HEAT Act, the acronym H-E-A-T, that's really focused on ensuring that customers, especially low-income customers, are not bearing the brunt of paying for this transition. And so, as you said, there are powerful forces, whether it's commercial real estate, builders who are looking for the city or for customers to pay to foot the bill or resisting this outright. So there's lots of fun, creative tactics, whether it's free ice cream or other things. It's a great time to get involved in this work. And Dianu Circles are gearing up for the next legislative session in order to get those important pieces of legislation and additional funding for this work over the finish line.
It is 9:35 a.m. You're listening to Beyond the Pale, radio's home for the Jewish left here on WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming at WBAI.org. We're on with Dalia Rakowitz of Dianu, a Jewish call to climate change. And we're talking about climate, the crisis, Maui. Right now we're going locally. We're talking about New York, and what was just mentioned was actually ice cream, this promotional thing. The other local New York climate related or environmental related news is there is this drama right now that's mostly manufactured, I sense, and that is a law proposed to make ice cream trucks, which burn a lot of diesel fuel to keep everything cold, more than many other food trucks, and are near children and have workers that are inhaling that and stay often in very fixed locations in the city. Like in different parts of the city, it's they run around more, but in very busy parts of the city, they just stay like for 14 hours. And the law proposed is to, I think it's by Lincoln Ressler, the law proposed is to electrify the generators being used to keep all of those things going. And it's like a very, it leaves a lot of room for owners and operators of these trucks, because you have 3 years to switch from this diesel, very dirty, very loud, generator to electric. And then at the end of the day, the electric actually ends up being much cheaper for operating. So right now it's becoming this this kind of wedge issue that Republicans and others like to manufacture, and they're basically calling it, like, you know, liberals banning ice cream. And I mean, that's kind of smart. It's smart to take something so beloved as ice cream and say that a group wants to ban it, versus maybe make it cheaper, because it would be cheaper to operate on electric battery than a diesel generator. But I love to hear that there's another ice cream story that I didn't know about, and I'm really curious to learn more. Where can I get this ice cream?
That I did not know about the great ice cream wars of 2023, and I think I think lifting up in particular that the direct beneficiaries, frankly, are the people who work in those ice cream trucks, who are breathing that dirty air day in and day out, and the surrounding community. So I think that's, you know, such a good point, and also something to sort of break through the noise. You know, I am on Twitter right now trying to find out where the ice cream shop is going to be next.
Oh, that's right.
I believe New York Communities for Change is leading that. So if you check out their Twitter, I think that might be a good way to find it. But I think, you know, to me, this is also speaks bringing it back to Jewish climate action of, I think there's a sense of all that you need to give up. And this is that climate action is about grievance and sacrifice. And these are all great examples of how it's fun to take climate action. It's fun to embrace this vision of a just and livable future. If we need to be rethinking everything about our society, how can we be doing so in a way that works for everyone? And how can we try and address historic wrongs? So we try and bring that into all that we do. And there are lots of great organizations in New York. I know New York Renews was also heavily engaged in this work around the HEAT Act that are bringing these fun, creative tactics as an opportunity to face head on what can be these overwhelming issues or these, unfortunately, culture war issues that are really just about what is the future that we're building for ourselves and for our families and communities.
I remember the power of doing something with our faith and our cultures. And that was during it was during the Never Again action. And it was very powerful to be present as a refugee myself, a highest refugee, to be present in this New Jersey, I think it was Elizabeth, New Jersey parking lot of ICE and of a detention center. Where families were being separated and people were being deported, and hearing these stories. And one of the stories that I filmed when I was there was of this young woman who spoke about her ancestors as the partisans, as the people who had to hide in forests in Europe as militants, as Jewish militants in self-defense. And her story about how she felt that for the first time in her life, she was making those people who fought for her literal existence by surviving proud. And it was extremely moving, not only to everyone who saw that clip. It was like, I don't know, a million views or more or something like that, but to activate Jews. Like, people reached me who were never political. They really, you know, they did the things, like someone told them, you know, they tell us to recycle and they recycle. They tell us to offset carbons and they did that. They tell us to do, you know, like these things that really feel like just making people feel like busy work, like that you would give a child to feel better that they're participating. And for the first time, it was, for my friends who reached me about it, who I try not to like be too aggressive to like politicize them. I know that doesn't work, but then them just passively seeing that and just being inspired and holding this responsibility and, hope. Like, it's not like it's the activists I see in these spaces, Jewish or not, are like really driven by joy and this like very positive vision, and they build relationships, they build new communities, they find fiancés. Like, it is incredible, like the energy that comes together when people get around, especially when an organization, which I actually am a strong believer in organizations versus just decentralized, just people powered stuff, because I feel like there always needs to be someone. When we're all dealing with our own family crisis, our unemployment, our struggling with rent, our health, all those things, and we just bow out of participation from the world for that moment, to me, it feels good to know there's an organization that keeps it moving. And it also feels good to see organizations that also allow for that sort of decentralized kind of power building and joy, really. So like, I'm really excited, especially now that, you know, it's not so challenged by the lockdowns and things like that, of what, you know, where Dainu goes, the impact it makes. It is like this, like you said earlier, this urgency. And I think there's a lot of groups that do a good job, like Extinction Rebellion, others, and Sunrise, of course, to like tell us about the urgency and to represent a young community, especially with Sunrise. But with this, I feel like there is this opportunity. It's like multi-generational, very multi-faith, very accessible to people who may be newer to showing up on the streets or doing a disobedience or, you know, calling, spending a day calling legislators or texting them. And I really appreciate that this effort really exists. It's very exciting to me.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I think one thing that we've seen is that a lot of the Jewish climate activists and leaders we're in touch with are tremendous organizers. They just haven't thought of themselves in that way. And so when we're leading a series of direct actions, you know, we've shown up on senators' doorsteps, blowing shofarot, talking about the call for action to go big on climate, or showing up outside of bank branches and asset manager offices to deliver matzah, to move their dough out of fossil fuels, that this is something that can be really fun and familiar, and that it's drawing off of a lot of the skills that you might use to be in community, but in service of something else. And so it's been really beautiful to see our leaders across the country really come into their own and say, this isn't something I haven't done before, or this feels new to me, but I'm willing to give it a shot. And we're here to support you. You can do it. And look at all these other people across the country. You are part of something bigger than yourself.
I could see the organizer in you. It's amazing how you are able to, I just never thought of it even that way. And I've organized my whole life, but having heard like the way you framed, there are people already organizing. They just don't know they're organizing. And I know so many people. I know like my sister who's like making sure this like family led soccer thing doesn't fall apart in Long Island.
Totally. Like, you know, for all the chesed committees and, you know, all the meals that get organized, you know, long before Meal Train, the Jewish community knew how to set up a family that was, you know, going through a life cycle event. And so it's just helping think about some of that, in different ways. And as you alluded to, the Jewish community has faced, the Jewish people have faced existential crisis before. Yeah. You know, we just marked, Tisha B'Av not so long ago. And that was a destruction to the Jewish world in its full orientation. And yet, the Jewish people of that time totally reinvented the faith. Similarly, we know there's so much we can draw off of, whether it's, you know, organizing a meal train or just this history of we've faced crisis before and we've found ways forward. We really want to be drawing off of that.
Okay, thank you. I don't know, like, I feel like, I also feel like there's this contrast for me, like this joy in organizing and then this dread with the news. It's not even just Maui. It's like these temperatures rising, everywhere. And then all of the dominoes that fall because of those kind of things, like if the temperatures rise, then the coral, then if the coral, then this, like now this disease in the salt water that like some bacteria, it's just like so much. And I wonder, like, what are the tools? Like when someone comes to you and says, like, I just feel overwhelmed and I don't feel like I could, when I feel overwhelmed, I just want to withdraw. Like what are the tools you've seen that work to re-engage people and have them come back?
Yeah. I will also, you know, I can speak for myself and I can speak for Dainu. I've worked on climate for going on a decade now. And, for those of us who are in this work too, you have to go through your own personal grief, and find a way forward to sustain yourself in this work. And I think it's okay to sit with those feelings. It's good to work through those feelings. I think turning away from those feelings is also problematic. So I think there's, you know, we're, to some extent, we're not trying to sweep anything under the rug. And so specific to our spiritual adaptation work, we actually have a workshop, that is like 2.5 hours. And it uses a framework, a Buddhist framework actually around the work that reconnects. And it's all about, sitting with grief, but also finding a way forward. And I think dedicating some time to really dig into it, it might not be fun and it might not be easy. But it's so critical to be giving time and space for that. And so where we bring that workshop to communities across the country, we've had a few in New York, and I believe we'll have more in 2024 back in New York. We also sometimes run them virtually. So that is sort of one intervention that we have as Dianu. The other is our existence as an organization, first of which is doing this work in community, knowing you're not alone. There's so much research out there, regardless of the issue, that shows doing it with other people is really just a way to nourish yourself and sustain yourself in this work and stick with it for the long haul. And I think this is also where this idea of you don't need to do everything, and it's not on you to figure out what to do. It's finding trusted organizations, whether that's Dianu or another, it's finding friends and allies who can say, here's something you can do right now at this moment, that yeah. will have an impact. And so why don't we focus on this and doing this together? So a recent example, Dianu partnered with the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism to submit comments to the Environmental Protection Agency, which is looking at the pollution that comes from power plants that are fueled by gas and by coal. And, you know, it's like, you can be turning down your heat and turning down your air conditioner and also, you know, trying to walk more and drive less. And it can start to feel really overwhelming, but this is something at a systemic level. It can actually like impact what is actually, you know, running our air conditioning and running our lights, and powering our cars if we have electric vehicles or our transportation. And so this is something you can do in this particular moment. We're going to do it together to increase our impact. And so that's one of the benefits of finding these organizations, finding these communities who can help keep you grounded and also focused on where to have the best impact.
Thank you, Dalia, for coming on the show and sharing so much with us and reinvigorating this fight at this critical time. And I love, this is the first time I think you and I have ever spoke. So it's like really exciting for me.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, like, where do people sign up and where do they follow and join and learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. So the easiest thing to remember as you are, this is in your earbuds, is just dianu.org, dianu.org. And on our homepage, you can find ways to start or join a Dianu circle, to request one of those workshops, on confronting the climate crisis. And most importantly, to join, the kickoff for our new campaign. It's happening on October 4th. That's going to be focusing on, again, realizing those benefits of these historic investments in climate, jobs, and justice. So to get plugged into Dianu, just join us, dianu.org. You're also welcome to email info@dianu.org. And we can get back to you with any specific requests, or things that are on your mind or questions. I will also say for New Yorkers, there is an action coming up that Dianu is not directly involved in organizing. It is actually happening on Saturday, September 17th. Mm-hmm. So for those who it's within their Rosh Hashanah observance to participate in an action, there's going to be a march to end fossil fuels. We're going to be ensuring that there is a prayerful space and grounding space before the march. And that Jews who do want to be participating can be marching together. So again, if you are interested in finding out more about that, you're already planning to go, or it might be something that might be meaningful to you, you can just email info@dianu.org. And you can also learn more about the march at endfossilfuels.us.
Thank you, Dalia, for coming on. It is 9:53 a.m. You're listening to Beyond the Pale, Radio's home for the Jewish left, here on WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming on WBAI.org. I'm your host, Rafael Shimonov. We were on with Dayenu and Dalia Rakowitz, the Jewish Call to Climate Change, and an amazing group. I want you to follow and sign up. That is our time really for the show. I want to remind folks that, you know, a lot of other stations, almost every other station you're listening to, is funded by climate criminals, basically. So, and this one is not. And we need this independent voice. And in order to maintain this independent voice at BAI, it's powered by people like you. So please go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org, or call 212-209-2950 to donate. And also do always check out JFRJ, Jews for Racial and Economic Justice. We have the Mazels coming up, which is our award show gala. It's going to be outdoors, full of activities. It's sort of like a festival. It's very exciting. So please do go to JFRJ and check that out. And I'm so grateful to our guest. And as always, Shabbat Shalom.
Commissioner Idanis Rodriguez from the New York City Department of Transportation. Mayor Adams and I invite you to Summer Streets this year in every borough. In Queens and Staten Island on July 29th. In Manhattan on August 5th, 12th, and 19th. And in the Bronx and Brooklyn on August 26th. Visit nyc.gov/summerstreets for more details. See you then.
Next WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting is Sunday, August 20th at 1 p.m. The meeting is held by teleconference at 619-309-1058. The PIN number is 641-711. The WBAI Community Advisory Board provides input to our local station board from community members. about programming and station operations. And everyone is welcome to call in and join the CAD meeting. Again, the meeting is this Sunday, August 20th at 1 p.m. The call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number is 641-711. We hope you can attend.
WBAI's election balloting period has started, and you can vote through September 30th, 11:59 p.m. Look out for a link to your e-ballot in the form of an email from invitations@mail.electionbuddy.com with the subject line, Vote Now, Pacifica Foundation, Inc., 2023 Local Station Elections. You may also receive a text message with a link to your e-ballot. If you need to request a new ballot, file a ballot request form by visiting elections.pacifica.org. If you do not have access to the internet, please leave a voicemail on 213-635-9363. Please only file one request, as multiple requests will slow down the processing time. It's 99.5 FM WBAI in New York and online at WBAI.org.